Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
What is up, fight fans? We welcome you into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. Thank you so much for being a part of the show this week. Boxing world buzzing. Some positive energy has entered the fray as Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter fight is now official, which joins a very strong list of upcoming fights this fall with an asterisk next to it. You have to put that asterisk next to it. I'm very aware of that, but I'm remaining positive. Joining us on the show this week, Ariel Helwani, the great MMA reporter from MMA Fighting, does some work with BT Sport, formerly of ESPN. A great interview with Ariel on the overall health of boxing, the MMA versus boxing debate, the business side of things, Anderson Silva, what's next for him, Jake Paul, and that whole thing that's going on in boxing, which is, I believe, a good thing. So you get Ariel's thoughts on that. I truly think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Ariel, good friend, and a really fun interview with Ariel. But the big story this week is Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter fight being made official. The purse bid that we all wanted to watch on Facebook was delayed for 2 weeks and outright canceled. And that's a good thing because it means that they were able to hammer out a deal, PBC and Top Rank, get this fight done. It's good to see them working together. They can work together to make fights. If it makes dollars, it makes sense. I truly believe this will be a good piece of business for Terrence Crawford and Top Rank and PBC and Sean Porter. But shout out to the WBO. We like to get on these sanctioning bodies, and rightfully so. They do a lot of shady things, but they did not need to sanction this fight. They did not need to order this fight. Terrence Crawford is the champion at WBO. The number two ranked or number one ranked contender is Virgil Ortiz. Behind him is Sean Porter. It is unprecedented for a sanctioning body to jump over a fighter like Virgil Ortiz and make this fight between Porter and Crawford, but it's very much needed and is very much wanted. I think that the sanctioning bodies can do a lot more good. They can wield their power for good if they put more pressure and they order these types of fights. Puts pressure on the promoters, puts pressure on the fighters. Because if Terrence Crawford didn't take this fight, he would have relinquished his WBO belt, and you know that he doesn't want to do that. As for the actual fight itself, this is undoubtedly Crawford's toughest fight to date. He's coming off a year-long layoff. His last fight was against Kell Brook, where he dominated. But I believe that he's still in his prime. Is he on the tail end of his prime at age 34? That is up for debate. But you take a look at his 47.5 power connect rate, ranks number three, just percentage points behind Canelo and Lomachenko. His defense remains elite, only getting hit with 21% of his overall connects. And now he undoubtedly has a very worthy dance partner in Sean Porter. Enter Sean Porter. The guy is a dog. His resume is long. This is going to be Crawford's toughest test. Sean Porter is going to be right up in Terrence Crawford's grill like he was against Errol Spence. A really tough fight for Spence. There isn't a welterweight today that throws more power punches per round than Sean Porter. 38 of his 54 punches thrown per round are power shots. Just ask Errol Spence. But the question in this fight, the biggest tactical question in this fight, is will Porter exchange? Will he be willing to stand in front of the very powerful Crawford? That is the biggest question in this fight. You take a look at Porter's resume, you've got to take your hat off to him. It now includes Devin Alexander, Kell Brook, Adrian Broner, Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia, your Dennis Ugas, Errol Spence, and now Terrence Crawford. So hats off to the fighters. Hats off to the WBO. Hats off to the promoters. It is a great time to be a boxing fan. I promise you that. The deal was made, and it joins a long list now of very intriguing fights this fall that I truly believe will happen. Without further ado, here he is, the man, Ariel Helwani. Our next interview is brought to you by the Fit Warrior brand, proudly serving boxing's next generation of stars since 2016. Go check them out at FTWR.com. And without further ado, here is the man of the hour, of the MMA hour. It's Ariel Helwani of MMA Fighting, of BT Sport, Spotify, Ringer. He's got a Substack. He's on Are you on Cameo, Ariel?
I am on Cameo. I had a 2-month hiatus there, and I was like, you know what? Let's do the Cameo thing. And it's been pretty good.
Yeah, so Ariel's everywhere now, and he's reporting on boxing, he's reporting on MMA, he's reporting on wrestling. So it's been a good stretch for you, and you're also in the boxing world now too, covering that Jake Paul fight for Showtime. And I'm happy to have you here on Inside Boxing Live, Ariel.
Oh, this is great. I'm a big fan, as you know. I believe this is the preeminent boxing podcast / show. You do a fantastic job, get big guests. I really like what you're doing. Dare I say, I think you should be more respected and more viewed and more listened to in the world of boxing. There's a lot of interesting characters in the world of boxing media, as you well know. And I always think that you are on point with your takes and your guests and your viewpoints. So honored to be here. I feel like, you know, all I had to do was one Showtime event, and now I'm kind of accepted in the world of boxing. Or maybe I'm not. I don't know. But it's good to be here nonetheless.
Yeah, we had a legitimate talk. Mind you, first, you had to become legit. You had to be next to Al Bernstein first in order to make your appearance here. I appreciate those words, and I agree. People should listen more because I spit that fire. But let's talk, man, where do we even start? You're the perfect guest for this week because the last couple of weeks in boxing, it's been this MMA versus boxing. I wouldn't even say experiment anymore because it feels like it's here to stay. I read your Substack on the Holyfield Triller event, which was just absolute madness. But I do want to start with something positive to come out of it, and that's Anderson Silva. And I feel like his run now in this whole MMA turned boxer thing is one positive that came out of that show. And I also think it's one positive to come out of this whole entire thing we're seeing with MMA fighters heading over to boxing. Can you put into words what it means to have Anderson Silva have this resurgence in boxing?
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. Here's a guy who literally for the past 10, 11 years was openly begging to box. This was in his prime when he was champion of the UFC, when he was the pound for pound king, the face of the UFC in many respects, defending his middleweight title, moving up to light heavyweight. Every fight, openly begging the UFC brass to let him box. And his dream was to box Roy Jones. And they said no, and they said no, and they said no. And then, of course, he loses the title and, you know, he sticks around and then goes on this losing streak. And then his contract expires and now he's a free man. And it's really been one of the feel-good stories of the year, in my opinion, in boxing, but especially in MMA, to see Anderson Silva at 46, who was kind of left for dead, who was, you know, brushed off to the side. I mean, this guy didn't get, yeah, I joked about this recently. I know you're somewhat of a pro wrestling fan, right?
Yeah.
You know, WWE gets a lot of heat for releasing guys and all this stuff. It's part of the business. And they'll always send out a tweet or post something on their website, you know, we wish so-and-so well in their future endeavors. And that's it. Like, it's become a gimmick in its own right. Like, that one line, you've been future endeavored. Anderson didn't even get that from the UFC. He didn't even get a tweet. He didn't get a mention. He didn't get a video package. He got nothing for all the years of being the man in the UFC. And now he finally gets to go to boxing, which is where he always wanted to be. And he fights, you know, I know Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is not who he once was, or maybe who we all thought he was going to be, but he outclassed him. And we saw shades of old Anderson in that fight. And it was so nice. And then he comes back on this one. Now, I never liked this matchup to begin with, because to me, I don't want to see Anderson do MMA ever again. I want to see him ride out this boxing thing till the very end. I certainly don't want to see him box other MMA legends. Like, that's not interesting to me. I want to see him box boxers, young and old, whatever. And so this matchup was a little funky, but just to see him moving around, to see him get the win, it's been a beautiful story. And you know what's really interesting? Anderson has a past with PEDs multiple times. And yet some guys, like Vitor, get branded with that brush forever. Other guys like Anderson, because of what they meant for the sport, it's almost like people want to forget about it and they just want to revel in his success now. And it's really nice to see. So I'm happy for him. And I'm really curious to see where he goes from here. Like, if I'm a Showtime, if I'm a PBC or something, like, I'm signing Anderson Silva and I'm seeing where this goes. Cause he's a pretty good boxer. Like, I know he's 46.
Is he signed with Triller? No. Is he just like an independent like you are?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's independent Anderson, like independent Ariel. But don't you think like there's at least some sort of curiosity? He's not embarrassing himself. He can move. I know he's 46, but I feel like there's something there for a couple more fights.
Well, listen, he did the boxing world favors. He got in their good graces right away by defeating Chavez Jr., who, let's be honest, is out of all these MMA guys fighting boxers, he's a legitimate guy. He's a guy just a few years removed from having a title run, fighting Canelo. So that was a huge win. That showed that he had it in him. But I do think there is a lot of like good aura around Silva, the fact that he's just a legend. And it's funny with the PED stuff. It's funny how what guys get brandished as drug cheats. We're seeing with Oscar Valdez in the boxing world. That's going to follow him his entire career. And what guys were afraid to just kind of like, I'm not going to look at that. And you see it in baseball, too, with like David Ortiz. Guy failed one of the first ever PED tests in 2003. But he's not known as that because he's such a good guy. It just shows you how you can rebuild your career. And Silva is definitely rebuilding his career. So how does this play out for him? Like, how does it end?
Man, I think it ends with a couple more fights at least. I don't see him slowing down. Like, I don't think he wants to go till 55 or anything like that. But I'm being serious. Like, I don't think there's a, you know, we could get into the whole Triller thing. Who knows how long they're going to be around. I have said openly, like, who knows if that Teofimo Lopez fight even happens, right?
It's not on Ticketmaster.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it was a cool thing on that one day when they won the purse bid, but there's a lot of red flags there. And so I would love to see him hook up with a Showtime, another, you know, outlet that is putting on legitimate fights. And, you know, I don't want to see him fight guys who are 24, 25, but I would love to see him fight guys who are around 38, 39, who are still somewhat good and in their relative primes, and see how far this goes. We, I think, as the MMA community, are so happy that he is doing well, because we all knew how much this meant to him. Like, he openly talked about this while he was the GOAT, while he was the man, he openly talked. So to see that smile, to see everything going on in the ring with him, like, to me, that was the story of Saturday and should have been the story. And it was so weird afterwards seeing the Triller guys, Ryan Kavanaugh and company, you know, kind of hitch their wagon to Vitor. I'm like, you guys know you have the greatest fighter of all time in many people's eyes in the co-main, and you're just kind of like brushing him off to the side. That's the guy you should be hitching your wagon to. Not Vitor, in my opinion. And, and I'm not trying to hate on Vitor, but there's levels, you know?
I mean, it was just so forced. It was so, like, you know, not organic with the Belfort. I don't want to get into all that afterwards. But you're right. Silva was a guy that was linked to Roy Jones for years. And this is when they were both somewhat in their prime. And I know Jones love a piece of him now, but that won't end pretty, because Silva's actually has that boxing ability. That's his first love. So that's interesting. And I love you brought up the fact that you don't want to see him against a 24-year-old. Perfect segue into Jake Paul, who was on your show this past week. And a lot was revealed in that interview, because it comes down to what's next for Jake Paul, because there are a lot of boxing fans and just people in general that want to see this train get derailed. They want to see it end. So they're looking at the list of potential opponents for Jake Paul. And he brought, you know, Silva is one of them out there, which I don't really think it makes sense, because, like he said himself, beating up on an older legend, it's just that whole narrative that's it's there already. And I think there's something else for him. The Masvidal thing, I think we can just cut that out, right? Because of the ironclad UFC contracts, what you just talked about with Silva.
They made the McGregor fight. They made the McGregor fight with Mayweather, and there was a huge issue there with Showtime, and they got over that now. Is this a bigger fight? No. Is it as big of a fight? No. But can I just say something about something you just said? Because I agree with what you're saying in terms of a lot of people want to see the Jake Paul thing come to an end. And then I also hear people saying, you know, what an indictment on boxing, what a black eye for boxing, all this stuff is at the same time. And my two takes on that is, number one, the fact that all this is happening now in boxing, MMA guys going to boxing, Jake Paul going to boxing, social media guys going to boxing, to me, is actually an indication that boxing is super healthy, that boxing is cool, that people want to be a part of boxing. They're not going to MMA because A, they realize there's not a lot of money there. B, they say, okay, let me go here. It could be a big event. You know, it's kind of the Wild West with the different networks and streaming platforms. Like, this is where I can make money. But it's also a cool thing. Thanks to the likes of Canelo and Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua and Terrence Crawford. Like, boxing is cool. This isn't an indication. When boxing is cool, or when anything is cool, then you get the leeches and the stuff like that that try to imitate. When it's not, when it's a dead piece of wood, there's no one that wants to be a part of it. So number one. Number two, you know what is so quote unquote boxing? It's people hoping that the Jake Paul experiment comes to an end and not recognizing that Jake Paul is doing a lot of great things for boxing. Just ask Montana Love, just ask Amanda Serrano, ask Daniel Dubois, ask Tommy Fury if Jake Paul is good for boxing. Those guys got a huge platform on a Sunday night in Cleveland in late August when let's be honest, people aren't talking about Montana Love and Ivan Brancic on a Sunday night in Cleveland in late August on Showtime. Like, he is doing, there's a trickle-down effect. Now, if he would have stayed in the Triller model and he's fighting on cards, you know, above Joe Fournier and David Haye, then yeah, like, this is all kind of like a cash grab and there's no future. This guy, the trickle-down effect is leading to other people knowing who the Montana Loves of the world are, and God knows who else is going to be on the card. So why would you want that to end?
No, you're right.
This is good for boxing. So yeah, sorry for going on the tangent, but
you're parroting exactly what I've been saying since day one, that you have to separate. The nuance is necessary for this in a world where there really isn't any nuance, especially on Twitter. It's one thing or another. I hate Jake Paul. I love Jake Paul. There is no middle ground. And the middle ground is everything that you just illustrated, what he's doing for the fighter pay, what he's doing, going after the UFC in its right on in its own right is a great thing. And you're right, though. You have to take a look at it. And it takes like a deeper thought to see that the boxing model is aesthetically pleasing when it just the whole night you were there. That's probably the biggest boxing event you've ever been to, right? Outside of Mayweather McGregor,
right in the balls there, Dan. I mean, I've been to some big events. I was at Yuri Foreman fighting against Miguel Cotto at Yankee Stadium. I mean, that was a scene.
I was in the Yankee bullpen.
I've been to Arturo Gatti fighting in Montreal. Okay, I'm not some noob here. All right, just to let you know.
But in terms of the arena, look, I said it last week. Whenever we were talking about the fight had everything. It had the buzz, yeah. It had the attention, it had the sold out arena, it had people talking about it. Everyone was charged up. Did the fight exactly, you know, matriculate into a good fight? Not really, but everything was there.
It wasn't a stinker.
No, it wasn't, because we saw Jake Paul pushed up against. We saw things that we didn't see out of Jake Paul, and went the distance, and there was drama involved. But my main
was it an MMA card in the way it was constructed? A little something for everyone. You had the one female fight there. You had the prospect, Dubois. You had Tommy Fury, you know, the sort of, ooh, I'm interested in this guy and his back. Like, it felt more to me, it felt like an old school Strikeforce Showtime card that had something for everyone. The curiosity factor, the up-and-comer, the legit star, the female fight. You need a little more of that in boxing, not just the one fight card, not just the one and a half fight card, right? Like, no, to me,
the fans were there before the card even started.
Yes, it was great.
You go to a Barclays Center for a PBC show, and when I get there, it's, you know, 6-7 o'clock for our report time, and you can hear a pin drop in there, and you got guys fighting in there. It's definitely a good thing, and we're not gonna, you don't have to sit here and praise Jake Paul, because everyone knows where I stand on it. I think what you just said, you parroted, but there are people that do want to see this derail. That's part of his allure. And that's part of him seeing who's next. Like, what's the next thing? Like, I love the fact that how he can reinvent himself, how he can now, you know, with Fury not looking good in that fight, with Paul kind of not looking that great either, but getting the win, you know, he has to go back to the drawing board. And I'm interested to see how this guy can reinvent a fight. To me, it's super interesting. And it's something that I think that all boxers need to take a page from.
Well, what's also interesting about it is it becomes like almost this game where he's the lottery ticket and you have all these people coming after him, but it's not just in one lane. It's not just in the boxing lane. You have the MMA fighters who are coming after him. You have the celebrities and all that stuff. I hope he doesn't go down that path. It doesn't look like he's going to go down that path anymore, at least for the time being. And so at least for now, you have these two different lanes with options. Now, yes, it's going to be hard to make a fight against a fellow fighter who's fighting in the UFC. That's you know, that would be fun. The Masvidal fight would be big. It would do great business for all involved, but I don't think the UFC really wants to play ball with him and or Showtime at the moment. It kind of feels like of the options out there, and again, why that card was so great in terms of how it was constructed, in my opinion, was usually on a good MMA card in the past, you've seen kind of like a thread between maybe the first fight and the last fight and this guy might, or the co-main and the last fight. And so Tommy was there to impress. I don't think he impressed the way we all wanted him to impress. He was fighting a guy who had fought at 135, 145, 155. He should have, at the very least, knocked him down, let alone stop him. The change in rounds was very bizarre to me the night before the weigh-ins. That being said, he's got the background, he's got the following, he's at a similar skill set, he's at a similar size. It kind of feels like the best route, at least for now. And then maybe next summer, when a potential Nathan Diaz is available and done with his contract, and maybe a horror. Now we're talking about some big fights. Like, to me, Diaz versus Jake Paul would be absurd. And Diaz has the boxing background too. Like, I don't think that's a crazy fight in its own right. So there are options for him. They just have to pick the right guy next. And I would love to see him get one more in by the end of the year, maybe, you know, mid to late December, end the year on a high note. And then 2022 could be really, really interesting for Jake Paul and company.
Yeah, it's hard to do what he just did, that event that we saw in August, every single time out. It's really hard to do that, to first of all, get the public involved that much, to find the right dance partner. So Fury's there, and I believe that's the fight that I said immediately following. You still have to make it, because it's a fight. It's a, he can say, listen, I actually fought a boxer. He comes from a bloodline, whatever, that whole marketing thing that the Fury's got going on. And you can, there's, it's sellable. And interestingly enough, if they put that fight over in the UK and Jake Paul can run amok in the UK and be an international heel, that could add intrigue to it. But I just don't know if Showtime wants to go across the pond right now. I don't know if it's even feasible given.
Does Jake Paul want you know, UK judges as well? Like, they would. I mean, we had one guy in Cleveland give it to Woodley. I love Woodley. I don't know how you scored that fight for Woodley. I thought maybe 1 to 2 rounds at most. But yes, no, that would be incredible. I mean, could you imagine John Fury, Tyson Fury, Tommy Fury against the Paul brothers? I mean, it would be insanity. The
only
bummer would be,
if you want to maximize the dollars, that's just, I mean, if you want to maximize the dollars, you go across the pond, because it's something that they haven't seen this act yet.
Right. Well, didn't he? Wasn't his amateur fight in the UK?
The first one with who was it, with Gibb or no, you know what's funny is that
he has an amateur fight. Gibb was pro, quote unquote.
That was in Miami.
There was an amateur fight on the card where I think his brother fought KSI, and I think that was in Manchester, if memory serves me correct. But
it wasn't on my radar yet then. I don't think it was on a lot of boxing fans' radar, the Pauls, because he fought in Miami on that Tevin Farmer card, and he was the co-main event, and I was there, and he was almost, I wouldn't say an afterthought, but I didn't even think about Jake Paul ascending to where he is today. So if you can take the hater shades off, you can see that this guy is doing.
Can I ask you a question? Do you get, like, I get when he's on the show, and it's becoming less and less, but I'll still get, like, you know, messages last night like, oh, you're such a disgrace. First, I'll get, you know, why is he on an MMA show? Meanwhile, all the opponents we're talking about for him, for the most part, are MMA guys. He keeps talking about the UFC pay structure, not the boxing pay structure. He's very much an MMA story, believe it or not. I mean, his manager used to work for the UFC, all that stuff. And B, he's just a really fascinating guy, and I think a very smart guy. Do you get hate when you talk about him? Do people say, like, ah, I'm done with you? Like, that's what I get. I'm unfollowing you. I'm done. How dare you spit in the face of the true fight fans? Like, what are you taking this so seriously?
First,
like,
of all, there's so no bad moral high ground in boxing. There's nothing, there's no pearl clutching going on in the sport of boxing. There's so many other issues today, currently, where Jake Paul would be very low on the list. But yeah, I get some people saying, like, why are you talking about this, this, that, and the other. But listen, the guy, like you said, he's very interesting. And if you can take the hater shades off and you can just see some of the what's coming from it, there's no doubt that he's an interesting figure. But yeah, I get that too. It's just it never ends. But I want to ask you about the scorecards. Did you see yesterday WBC judge Stephen Bollea, who scored the Valdez fight 117-110, which was an abomination of a card? He issued an apology. I have never seen that. Have you ever seen such?
I've not seen that. Where did he do it, on social media?
The WBC put out the statement in conjunction with him. He's a WBC employee or WBC judge. He hadn't judged a championship fight since 2019. The Valdez fight was close. It was, two of the judges had it 115-112 for Valdez. I had Cancillo winning, but the fact that the judge put out an apology, accountability, is unprecedented.
So I'll say a couple things there. I don't love when it's like a WBC guy or a commission guy, because that obviously leads to, you know, a whole bunch of issues. I don't know. Did you watch the Triller card on Saturday?
Yeah, I worked it.
You worked it? Oh, you worked it for, okay.
But, stats.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. I used your stats. No, but were you listening to the Trump feed or
no,
the regular?
No, I wasn't. I didn't get the Trump one.
The Trump feed was very interesting. Let me tell you, it was very interesting. Anyway, at one point, Junior Dos Santos, former UFC heavyweight champion, was trying to explain to Trump Sr. about these scorecards. Like, it went, and actually, to his credit, Trump seemed rather interested in the whole controversy. That's something that I've been saying and pushing for quite some time. Accountability with the commissioners, with the judges, with the referees. We certainly don't get it in MMA. And I love sometimes, you know, it was interesting. That was my first boxing event that I worked in that capacity, obviously the Paul Woodley fight. And when we were going through the, you know, the post-fight interviews and whatnot, they said, you know, if there's a controversy, we'll let you know if the referee will be available or it's, you know, whatever, commissioner, whatever. That would never be, like, you cannot talk to the referee in an MMA event or at a UFC, whatever. And to me, I want to see more of that. And so it always kind of drives me nuts, like when there's some kind of controversy and the person who has to answer those questions, and it's not fair to him, my feelings towards him aside, like Dana White should not be answering about like some referee's mistake or judge's mistake and stuff like that. So I hope that there's more. And I really think that there should be a push to have a Bob Bennett, an Andy Foster, whomever, show up with the commission, with the judge, with the referee in question at the post fight press conference and answer the questions.
Right. Why we know, that's never going to happen.
But you know, in the NBA,
no, you're right. In the NBA, MLB, they do it. In MLB,
there's a pool reporter. You go to the guy with a bunch of questions, and then you come back, and at least there's some kind of accountability, some kind of response, reasoning for a controversial call. Here, it's like, oh, see you later, and the fighter has to answer for it. The coach has, everyone who had nothing to do with it has to answer for it, and that drives me nuts.
Well, I've been to at fights when it's almost like the judges, they come in at the last second, like they kind of just unannounced, they just show up at their perch, and when the fight's over, they vanish. They literally burst into dust and they're gone, and you don't hear from them. But the MLB does something which I think at the very least combat sports can institute, like you just said with the NBA, they have, at the end of a series, one umpire speaks to one reporter, and that one reporter gets all the questions of what happened in this series. And usually by the, whatever happens in the first game, by the third game, it's not, or the fourth game, it's not really news anymore, but at least you have an answer. But it's baby steps just to see a judge say, I messed up, I had a terrible scorecard, I'm going to go get more training, I'm going to go to the NABF festival, whatever that is, because they are festivals. I don't know if you ever know that whole story. When they put on these conventions, they're big vacations at this point, but I'm going to go and get better, which something that I respected at first, but still, why was this guy appointed? Get to the root of the issue. Why was a WBC judge that hadn't judged a championship fight since 2019 on such a heavily scrutinized card with all the things that Valdez went through? That's the problem to me.
Yeah, they had the same issue in Ohio, by the way, a ton of inexperienced judges and referees. Again, we don't have this in MMA where it's like, you know, a sanctioning body putting officials in a fight. But you do have a situation where the UFC, the major leagues of MMA, goes to, say, Oklahoma City for a random fight night, and all of a sudden – the commission in Oklahoma is putting its buddies, you know, the one dude who runs the karate dojo down the street, and he's now all of a sudden refereeing and judging, you know, major MMA fights. Like, that's crazy to me. That's why I have actually, and I know some people don't like this, I've actually pushed for maybe the discussion to be centered around a national commission and just having, you know, a United States commission, and a guy like Andy Foster, who I think, you know, is the best of the best right now in California, overseeing. And now you're, and I know it would be a tall task and we're reinventing the wheel, but you should not be going to Cleveland for a major event with a lot of eyeballs and some dude who has reffed two fights in his life, you know, in there in the co-main event. Like, that's just wrong. It needs to, when the NBA went to Oklahoma City, when the Thunder moved there from Seattle, it wasn't open season for the, you know, the local Y referees to start refereeing NBA games. No, there's a system in place and there's guys who get dispersed, and that's the way it should work. And it should especially work that way in combat sports, in my opinion.
No, you're right. It's so these things happen in MMA too. I think boxing fans, they, or MMA fans have such, you know, they're on their high horse sometimes looking down at boxing. We don't have bad scorecards. We don't have corruption. No. Yeah, you do. It's the fight game. Okay, it's the Wild West. And I wanted to ask you, Ariel, we can get into the whole WBA nonsense and all that, but I'm trying to stay positive. I'm a positive person, almost to a fault when it comes to boxing. And this last couple of weeks have been rough. Every time I put out like a positive tweet about the upcoming boxing schedule, it just, the replies are just, oh, this fight's going to get canceled and we can't have good things. What's one part of boxing that you wish MMA was like?
Oh man, one part. There's a lot of parts. Well, I'll tell you, like, the first thing that just came to mind was the pay. I wish MMA fighters were getting, you know, of equal status and popularity and skill level, were getting paid, you know, what the boxers are getting paid, number one. I wish the MMA fighters had the freedom that the boxers had to have their own sponsors, to wear what they want. I mean, like, look at Paul and Woodley. Like, Paul had a freaking LED screen on his shorts. I'm not saying that that has to happen, but like, just to be yourself. I grew up loving boxing, loving Tyson, loving what he wore, all black with the black boots and the towel over. And, you know, guys like Gotti was my favorite. Roy Jones wearing, you know, Jumpman, like that. That's cool. And that's who they are. That's part of their personality. In the UFC, everyone looks the same and it drives me nuts. Like, I love, people get on me, it's like, it's about the fights. No, I love the posters. I love dissecting the posters. I love dissecting, you know, like the promos. Like, I love everything about the fight game. I love all the ancillary stuff just as much as the fights, the walkouts, the music, the entrances, all that stuff. And so I wish there was that. Obviously, the Muhammad Ali Act is a huge thing. We have nothing close to that in the world of MMA. That's a really big thing as well. I love, you know, little things like purse bids. We don't have that. You know, as crazy as those can be, I want the fighters to make as much as possible. Like, I don't want to see them reach 38, 39 and be like, man, I have nothing to show for my entire career. Or like an Anderson who has to now box at 46 to try to make up for lost time. And so from the business side of things, I love that. And I love that it's like, you know, it's structured more about like, oh, okay, we're going to go to this network and do this. Like, oh, it's funny. A lot of the stuff that boxing fans and boxing media complain about, I wish we had in MMA.
Dude, you said it perfectly because it's a catch 22. If you polled 10 boxing fans, I guarantee you 10 of them would say, I wish we had a Dana White. I wish we had an overarching, just one thing like UFC, NBA, NFL. Wish we had that. But do you really wish that? If you did get that,
if you're a true boxing fan, I would say, and you love the fighters, that's not what you're hoping for. Because yes, I get it. For as a fan on a Saturday night, you want to see Crawford fight Spence or something like that. It's a lot easier for that to happen if they were all under one umbrella. I get it. I truly get it. But if you love these fighters and you're fans of them and you want them to make as much money before their time is up, you want there to be as many options. You want it to be the boxing model, not the pro wrestling model where it's like, you know, one dominant league and maybe a second one. You want it to be more like boxing so that they could go out and make as much money. It might annoy you because you won't get Fury Joshua, or it's going to be a real long drawn out thing until you get it, like Mayweather and Pacquiao. But trust me, if you love these fighters, you want it to be more like that model than the one we have in MMA.
Yeah, right. Because I've posed this question or this conundrum a bunch of times. It's the UFC. You're watching great fights week after week, and you're getting that satisfaction of, I'm seeing a great fight. But in the back of your mind, do you care that they're not getting properly compensated? In boxing, it is like a balance. It's like, that's the one thing boxing fans can say to MMA fans. I see this all the time. When MMA fans shoot down at boxing fans, you see boxing fans shooting up saying, well, at least our guys are paid. At least, you know, they don't have to, you know, take the side jobs and they don't have to go on social media and say, I don't have insurance and this, that, and the other. But it comes down to, as a boxing fan, are you okay with these drawn out processes? Because you know that the fighters are getting well compensated, but you're not going to get the best fights. It's something that other sports fans don't have to deal with.
I would also say, as media, I love the fact that you have, you know, promoters, managers to talk to. Like, you have the Lou DiBellas of the world. You have, you know, all these, you know, you don't get the Al Haymans of the world. You can't speak to him. Has anyone gotten an Al Hayman interview ever?
I've seen him once. I was at Mayweather Cotto. I was right out of college. I was working as a celebrity spotter for HBO.
Nice.
And and of all things, a celebrity spotter. And I was running around the locker rooms. And after the fight, Bieber was in the locker room, 50 Cent, Triple H. I was certainly not supposed to be there, but I was. And Al Haymon comes walking in. And this is before PBC was even a thing. And someone said, oh, that's Al Haymon. It got quiet in the room. And I was like, what's everyone getting so, what's going on? It's like a celebration. And he just moseyed in. He said a few words to Floyd and he was gone. But no one has ever interviewed the guy.
Is there a reason for that?
He just chooses not to be in the forefront and he gets criticized for it. And this is an ongoing thing in the boxing world where Eddie Hearn is front and center. And Eddie Hearn sometimes doesn't deliver the biggest fights. He gives you promoter talk, but he's front and center. He's controlling the narrative, where PBC likes to do things behind the scenes. They have a Tim Smith. I don't know if you ever met Tim Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He, formerly of Daily News. Now he's the PBC's main PR guy. He kind of is the guy that is the go-to guy when it comes to speaking on behalf of the company. But you can't deny that Haymon, the fighters never complain about Haymon. If this summer, if there wasn't for all these cancellations, every big fight was a PBC fight. You can say that their fighters don't work well with other fighters, but we're seeing Tyson Fury fight Deontay Wilder. We're seeing Terrence Crawford fight Sean Porter. So if it makes sense, it's going to happen. But yeah, Heyman, he just doesn't speak, and it just leads to the allure of him. And you know, if you talk to anyone in the industry, they all have good things to say about him.
So all that being said, I love the characters as well, right? Like I like the posters and all that stuff. And so I feel like you guys have a lot of characters. Like Dana White does a great job. He's a great character. He doesn't talk to a lot of us these days anymore. But you have, you know, DiBella and Eddie Hearn, I think is a great character. Polarizing, no doubt. But I like these Bob is getting older. I get that. But each one, for the most part, I know PBC is the exception to the rule. Even like the Frank Warrens of the world. I love these characters. And sometimes it's a lot of BS. It's a lot of promoter speak. But not only do you get the promoters, you get the managers, you get all these things. Even another example, I just like the way it's structured. On the Friday, was it the Friday? Yeah, it was the Friday before Jake Paul. So it was the day before the weigh-in. They had, you know, like a coaches roundtable where, you know, Woodley's head coaches, head trainers were there. And Jake's, you know, BJ Flores was there with a couple other guys. None of those guys are ever available to us in MMA. Now, of course, I know most of them. I could find them. I could text them this and that. But I think it's cool. Even at the press conferences, you'll have, you know, Pacquiao up there next to Freddie Roach back in the day. Those guys are never at the – I love that stuff. You got the main event presser and then the undercard. Like, I just think there's a lot of things in boxing that MMA can learn from. Now, I know shoe on the other foot, a lot of boxing people will be like, oh, I wish it's like the UFC. They probably don't really understand how the sausage is made. And they do stuff as well that is very good. This is not all hate towards the UFC. They do a lot of things and have changed a lot of things that have made the sport. Make sure you tell people that as well when you clip this off and try to get me in more trouble, Dan, with the UFC.
I don't perform gotcha journalism. That's not my thing.
Make sure.
I'd probably be at the top right now.
They could probably learn a lot from each other and use elements of each other, but it fires me up when I hear people say boxing is dead, boxing is dying. For me, I think it's a great time to be a boxing journalist. I think it's a great time to be a boxing fan, promoter. It's a great time. There's almost every weekend there's a really interesting boxing card that I want to go out of my way to watch. Almost every weekend, I love it. And you know, you got the Zone doing their thing. They're kind of out of the MMA world. You got ESPN doing their thing with Top Rank. I mean, there's like a lot of Showtime, of course. It's a good time. I don't know what all the fuss is about.
It's just human nature. Fans, they like to complain, but to be a boxing fan is to embrace the circus, embrace the red light district of it. I've been exposed to it at a very young age. There are characters. Some of the most interesting, confused, complicated people are in this sport, and it all gets wrapped into one. And the fans that are diehards, they love it. They understand the chaos of it. Friends of mine that don't follow, and they're like, dude, why is Evander Holyfield fighting? What is Jake Paul? How did Jake Paul get to the top so fast? And I'm like, all right, do you have like 2 hours for me to?
Yeah.
But it is what it is. You have to, if the fight, it's a niche sport and it's a fun sport. Will it ever get to the top where with horse racing like it was in the tennis in like the 80s? No. But it's still fun and it's still lucrative. And that's why, to put a bow on this all, is why guys like Jake Paul, Anderson Silva are in the sport, because there's money to be made. This business model is there. Before we let you say goodbye, because I know you're a very busy man with your many media outlets. One fight on the upcoming boxing schedule that is an absolute can't miss for you, Ariel Helwani.
All right, so I'll give you one that I want to see that's made, and also one that isn't made yet that I really want to see. The two first that came to mind. The first one that came to mind was Joshua Usyk, because I really like watching Joshua fight. I know people have called him boring as of late since he got knocked out. I enjoy seeing a big man use his jab. I enjoy watching his speed, his footwork, all that stuff. I mean, I think he's an exceptional boxer. And I kind of watch it with one eye open, one eye closed, because I think we all want to see Joshua Fury at some point, and we don't want to see him slip up. We don't want to see Fury slip up against Wilder. It would be so boxing for them to slip up at this juncture. But that's one that comes to mind because, it's coming up on September 25th. I do love the Porter Crawford fight. I'm a big Crawford fan. I think he's great. He's not the most colorful character out there, but I mean, how could you deny that he's one of the best in the world? So that's a good one. It was just made. That's very exciting news. But I really want to. I can I be honest with you, to steal a term from the world of pro wrestling, I'm a big Katie Taylor mark. I love watching Katie Taylor fight. Anytime she fights, I go out of my way. I think Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano would be a huge fight in New York City. Could you imagine at the Garden with the Puerto Rican fans and the Irish fans? I'm a big fan of women's boxing. It has come a long way. I like watching Clarissa Shields fight. I love watching Katie fight, Amanda Serrano, Michaela Mayer. There's a lot of great young female fighters. It's about time that they start to get the respect and the attention that they deserve. And what has always been the issue in women's boxing, in my opinion, has been like, there's been one person here in this weight class and maybe someone, and like, it doesn't, here you have a situation. And I know 135 is probably a little too big for Amanda Serrano, although she has been there before. If you can make it at 135 and you can have these two tremendous fighters fight each other, maybe 2 and 3 pound for pound, if you have Clarissa number one, I personally think Katie's number one, but if you have Clarissa two or like, that's an incredible fight with two passionate fan bases. I really hope. And wouldn't it be great, Dan? And I know it's a bit of a tricky one with Lou and everything. We love Lou. But if Jake Paul and company is the one who's able to make that fight, I mean, the guy that everyone wants to see out of boxing, if he's the guy that can make this fight, I think it would be great.
He said it on your show this week that they're in talks and, you know, confirm. Yeah, it would be big. It would be huge. And it would make sense for, I think, March. And Eddie has said this, too, is March before the on St. Patrick's Day at the theater. It would be a scene and a half. And it's funny, women's boxing is something that I have a bit passion for too, working with Lou DiBella on his Broadway boxing series, the first ever, you know, series to do an all women's show, you know, hosted the first ever all women's pay-per-view with Clarissa Shields. And I get crap for it on Twitter because some boxing fans don't appreciate the women, but they have the best stories, Ariel. The best story. Alma Ibarra, who fought on the last show I was at in San Diego, was kidnapped the night before her Olympic trials. And she could not fight in the Olympic trials. She was held for over 24 hours. Her first words when she got released were, "What's wrong with my fight? Get me a fight." And she went on to win her fight. And now she's potentially going to fight Katie McCaskill or Jessica McCaskill in her next fight for all the belts at 147. The women's boxing has come such a long way. If we can put Taylor and Serrano in a fight and then put Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall, who have a history, the only person to defeat Clarissa Shields, albeit it was in the junior Olympic circuit in 2009. That right there is the two biggest fights of the last 20 years in boxing outside of, you know, Layla Ali and right. Frazier's daughter, which was more of a hype job than it was an actual fight. But
yeah, these are legitimate fights.
And these are legitimate fights because the world of women's boxing has come such a long way.
Yeah. So that's one that I would love to see happen. Obviously, I think we all want to see Fury and Joshua. That would obviously be a big one. I love watching Canelo these days. It's great to see him coming. Man, I would love to see that Logan Paul fight. No, I'm just joking. I'm just kidding.
Logan Paul, is he retired now? Or did he retire Floyd? Man, what a scene. You weren't involved with that one, right?
No, I was not. I was not involved with that one. I am more, I will be honest with you, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I worked that one. Like, that was just one for me. I'm more invested and interested. I'd love to get your thoughts on this, on Jake than Logan. Like, I think Jake has more skills, and there's kind of like a roadmap to what he's doing. The Logan thing is like, he shows up, he does a thing here or there. Also, Jake is forming this promotion. Like, there just seems like a more genuine interest in the sport of boxing as opposed to what, like, Logan to me is kind of in that celebrity world. Like, Jake is creeping over to this side of the fence. So I'm not as big into the Logan fight.
Oh, I think that's pretty clear. I think he'll even tell you that, you know, he was like almost dumbfounded that he was in a ring with Jake. Like, Jake Paul is obviously taking it very serious. And now with this promotion company, I think is a way for him to stay in the game. I don't know his shelf life in the actual ring. I don't know how long it is, but he can leave an imprint on the sport and really make things happen through this promotional company. And having him as a promoter would be tremendous, tremendous for boxing. But wow, Ariel, I appreciate it, man. I think that the main thing you can get from this conversation is that the world of boxing is interesting. It's thriving. I really believe it. Amazing. Outside of the cancellations that were outside of our or boxing's control with the COVID and all the nonsense with that, hopefully that's a thing of the past, because this upcoming 8 weeks in boxing could be tremendous, and that will then bleed into next year. You know, without even mentioning names like Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis.
I love Garcia. Oh, yeah. I mean, that whole 135-pound situation is tremendous. Garcia is amazing. What's your fight
that I want to see the most?
Yeah.
I would have to say Canelo. Canelo going to Fox for all the business people out there, business, it's a big part of the sport. Him going over to Fox and him aligning with the PBC at this stage in his career, he's at the peak of his powers. And he's never been more popular, speaking English, blah, 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 face of the sport. And now he aligns with PBC and Fox, with the NFL and their marketing machine. Al Heyman can get his tentacles into Canelo, get him in a room and say, hey, listen, this is what I did for Floyd in the pay-per-view model. And I did it with Floyd from scratch. I have you at age 30 in the prime with so many big fights on the horizon for you. That's intriguing to me from the business side. And then once they get in the ring, I truly believe that Caleb Plant is the closest fighter to his prime that Canelo has faced in a long time. Golovkin was just on the tail end of his prime, and Golovkin gave Canelo fits. I had him beating him in the first fight. In the second fight, I had Canelo edging out Golovkin in that one. But the thing that Plant lacks in that fight is what you need to beat Canelo. That's volume and that's power. Plant doesn't have volume, doesn't really have power, but he has the slickness. Slickness has given Canelo issues back in the early part of his career, but he's made leaps and bounds. That fight, to me, I feel like is can't miss. Canelo Plant. The only thing I do not like about it is that it's going up against that massive UFC card at the Garden. I would not be surprised if they bumped that, if they moved the Canelo fight off.
Yeah, November 6th, AEW, Pro Wrestling Promotion, moved. They were on November 6th as well, and they moved 1 week after. We all remember what happened with Canelo the last time.
It's a meme. He's laying on a couch, damn it. They and that's something that Canelo would, to this day, you know, angers him. He got humiliated that night.
It was crazy. I couldn't believe that they did that. I could not believe that they did. Oftentimes when there's two events going on at the same time, there's different audiences. But even so, like, you got to forge forward and say, like, I'm the man. I'm not waiting for Diaz and Masvidal to fight. Like, what the hell, man?
Especially in this era where you can just be on the zone. Their whole marketing plan is that you can watch the fight whenever. Yes. You can literally watch it at 3 a.m. and on your phone and whenever in your bed. Like, yeah, that was a whole mess. So I'm interested to see what happens with that. But that's boxing for you. You can, there's so many. It's a big spider web. But there are some really good fights on the schedule. MMA world buzzing too. I think that they, when they both thrive, it's good for the whole combat spectrum out there. So I'm excited. All right. You're not going to be able to take me down the negative side of things. I haven't looked at my Twitter since I put out the upcoming boxing schedule, but I know it's going to be littered with
people. I'm going to go on there now and talk some smack.
I know it's going to be littered with people telling me these fights aren't going to happen. This sport sucks. I just can't take it anymore. But I truly believe the minute that Joshua and Usyk step in that ring September 25th, it washes away some of the very bad headlines that the sport of boxing has had over the last 2 to 3 weeks, and it sets off a great run because you can forget about everything after a good fight. There was nothing better than a big fight in all sports, and that adrenaline afterwards, adrenaline beforehand. I'm excited. I can't wait. Ariel, you do a great job of covering the sport. I'd like to see you cover boxing more. I love it. Getting your thoughts on it. And we got to do this again sometime soon.
Anytime. Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. All the best to you. Keep up the great work as well.